The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to cooley@admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, March 6, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, the House Speaker is pledging to push through agricultural disaster assistance. Also, President Bush is off to Latin America this week, where a key topic will be ethanol. And delegates to the National Pork Producers Council have weighed in on renewable fuels. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, the latest ag weather from Don Day. And Todd Gleason says there's crop circles just south of the University of Illinois campus. Really? It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, 501 down 9 1/4. May, 501 1/4 down 6 3/4. At the Chicago Board of Trade on LaSalle Street, March wheat, 459 1/2 down 8 1/2. May, 473 down 7 3/4. July, 485 1/2 down 6. March corn, 412 1/2 down 4 3/4. May, 422 down 4 3/4. July, 430 3/4 down 4 1/4. December, 406 1/2 down 2 1/2. March beans, 733 down 2 3/4. May, 747 3/4 down 2 3/4. July, 763 down 2 3/4. November, 786 1/2 down 1 1/4. March soybean meal, 213.50 down 190. March soybean oil, 29.45 down 14. At the Merck March feeders, 103.37 1/2 down 40. April live cattle, 97.60 up 25. And April lean hogs, 65 even, unchanged on the day.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is John Hester of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He's filling in for Wayne Nelson, who was pulled away from the office today. Thank you, John.
It's nice to talk to you again.
Thin market today. As you looked at the trade all day long, the market's just sort of drifted, you know, lower, but not a lot of volume, it looked like to me today.
No, it was a very light volume day, and again, light volume on new, fresh, fundamental news. The markets early tried to take out yesterday's high in corn and beans and wheat, couldn't do it. That brought in some fresh selling. They gradually worked lower most of the day. Beans acted like a couple times during the day that they would have liked to, you know, got into positive territory after the opening, but the wheat and the corn just weighed too much on them, and they weren't able to rally on their own today. And part of the weakness also in the wheat was a little better crop ratings, good moisture out there, and everybody's anticipating a larger crop than last year in the wheat in the United States. And, you know, basically it's no fresh fundamental news right now.
Do you think that the markets are in the process then of sort of carving out a sideways trading range, waiting on the end of the month and the reports that will come out?
Yes, we feel that way over here. That know, I think we're searching for a platform here, a base to be put in, and you know, there's a lot of things weighing on the market. You know, you've got supply and demand coming out this weekend, and everybody's looking forward to the March 30th planting intentions and those big numbers. And I even heard a number today, 14 million acres more corn next year. And, you know, some of the weather people are putting out, we're going to have a wet spring and a hot, dry summer. You know, I don't know if that's going to come to pass or not, but, you know, if that's the case, that, you know, probably that corn's not high enough yet. On the other hand, if we get the 10 to 12, 14 million extra acres of corn, the weather's ideal, you know, with the increased prices, and, you know, it's very possible that corn prices are high enough right here in this range, and beans also.
Who had the 14 million acre corn increase?
Oh, I can't tell you. I just lost it. I can't remember. It just slipped my mind. I read it somewhere on one of the reports. Oh, I'll tell you. Excuse me for being... I was talking a seed corn company, or the seed corn companies put out a little thing, and they're saying they've sold enough seed corn that they think that they've sold enough corn to increase corn acreage 14 million acres. And, well, it was from the seed industry. I don't know who put it out, per se.
We need to balance that number out, I guess, from with the numbers from the University of Missouri think tank Frappery, and they had corn today at 86.7. Of course, USDA's outlook was 87, and they also put the wheat at 60.1. The outlook was 60. They put the beans at 70.5, and the outlook was also 70.5. So at least that think tank very much in line with what USDA is estimating.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with, you know, that. And, you know, these are just numbers that they threw out. You know, I would not put too much value in them. You know, they're just numbers. So, but, and I also would probably think that, you know, farmers have overbought some seed too, trying to get the good genetics and everything.
So
maybe some seed turned back in later, but.
We'll have to wait and see how the weather plays out.
I have to wait and see how the weather plays out. You know, it's kind of, I was talking to Wayne in here, and, you know, in 5 weeks or a little over 5 weeks, planters could be rolling in this area, you know, around the 10th of April. A lot of people start planting over here then, so that's not very far off.
Turn your attention from the end of the month to the end of the week, where we will have another WASDE report out. We did get some estimates today from the trade. They put corn at 763 million bushel carryout for 2006-07, the beans at 589 million, the wheat 473. Not a lot of drawdown from last month, it appears.
No, and that could be the you know, that could be the start of a little rationing showing up too. You know, it takes a little while for the pipeline to change, and, you know, I don't know these but the government has surprised, you know, these numbers are kind of in line, and, you know, not much drawdown. You know, just a quick look at them, you might think that rationing has started. I do not know if it has or not. But the government could also pull a rabbit out of the hat Friday, too. They've been known to do that. Either way.
I guess we'll have to just wait and see and hold on for the ride, because
it will be a roller coaster, I'm afraid.
Yeah, everybody does seem to say that volatile prices are ahead.
I think that's correct, you know, and we're advising over here, anytime you can get $8 cash soybeans off the combine and $4 cash corn off the combine, a producer ought to be selling some.
Are you about, what, 20-30% sold on the cash at this point?
About 20, yeah, in that neighborhood, about 25, so that's 20, yes. You're right on the money there.
And what are you sold on paper, if anything?
We've protected or locked in some prices on about 20% of the grain.
Okay. John, it's great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, nice talking to you. Listeners or in Illinois again.
John Hester of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Taking a look at Ed Kuser's Tuesday forecast tonight, he says in northern Illinois and in northern central and southeastern Indiana, mostly cloudy with areas of light snow, with snowfall from 1 to 2 inches in the north overnight. Elsewhere, partly mostly cloudy, lows from 18 to 35 tomorrow. In Illinois and in southwestern Indiana, mostly cloudy early, then becoming mostly sunny. In northern central and southeastern Indiana, mostly cloudy with areas of light snow in the morning. Highs ranging from around 30 in the far north to 57 degrees in the far south. In agricultural news, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she'll attach emergency farm disaster aid to the Iraq War Supplemental Appropriations Bill. Over the weekend, House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson told reporters that ag disaster aid would cost about $4 billion and cover weather-related disasters in 2005, 2006, and 2007. President Bush has threatened to veto the Iraq War Supplemental Appropriations Bill if it contains ag disaster assistance. In a speech to the National Farmers Union, Pelosi told conventioners in reference to the Bush threat, and this is a quote, "We need to change his mind. We need your help to get that signature on the bill." A project between Brazil and Japan to supply Brazilian ethanol made from sugarcane exclusively to the Japanese market could cost $8 billion. Japan could require between 1.8 and 6 billion liters of ethanol per year, depending on the ethanol mix required. Japan is looking for a long-term stable source of ethanol because of persistent high oil prices. Meanwhile, on Thursday, President Bush leaves for a visit to Latin America. The president is expected to meet with Brazil's president on Friday and sign an accord to develop standards to help turn ethanol into an internationally traded commodity. The agreement would also promote sugarcane-based ethanol production in Central America and the Caribbean to help meet rising international demand. Delegates at the National Pork Producers Council's annual business meeting are calling for an end to ethanol subsidies, both the blender's tax credit and tariff on imported ethanol. USDA says ending the tariffs would have significant impact on corn and soybean plantings. Without the tariffs, USDA projects corn for ethanol use would fall 100 million bushels in 2008, 200 million in 2009, and 400 million in 2010. And soy oil for biodiesel would fall even more rapidly, World Ag Outlook Board Chair Gerald Bangi.
But on biodiesel, you do see a much more severe impact beginning in 2008. Where we'd use about 2.4 billion pounds less of soybean oil for biodiesel.
The MPPC is also calling for early release without penalty of Conservation Reserve Program acres back into crop production. The chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee has reservations about a Bush administration plan to end subsidy payments for producers with adjusted gross incomes over $200,000. Iowa Democrat Tom Harkin, in an interview with DTN, says the Bush plan, in his words, just isn't doable. American Farm Bureau Federation economist Bob Young says AFBF has some definite problems with the proposal. Young says higher corn prices will likely increase the number of producers who would fall under the plan. Young says as many as 144,000 producers could lose farm subsidies under the Bush proposal. Last week, USDA put out a news release clarifying the definition of AGI, saying that farmers would be allowed to average income over 3 years to remain eligible for commodity payments. Agriculture remains one of the most dangerous professions in the country. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report on efforts to make the industry safer.
March 4th through 10th is Agricultural Safety Awareness Week, which is dedicated to shedding light on the importance of farm safety education.
Hopefully each farmer will put a little emphasis into thinking, okay, what are my hazards? What are areas that I need to focus on to make sure that I am safe and I keep those around me safe?
Pennsylvania farmer Chris Hoffman knows at least a dozen people hurt in farm accidents. He says being in a hurry is often the cause of injuries and deaths.
My niece just got married, and her husband was working on a farm and got his arm caught in a corn picker. Tried to clean it out while I was running. We all know these are things that you do not do. Unfortunately, at times we're in a hurry. We throw the caution to the wind and bad things happen.
Baseball legend and Texas rancher Nolan Ryan is the official spokesman for Agricultural Safety Week because it's something he feels strongly about.
I think one of the key things is training your people before they start to work. Equipment has safety guards on it, it has warning signs, and it has a manual. So if there's any question whatsoever, they need to refer to those things, and that safety equipment's there for a reason.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
Corn plantings have begun in deep southern states, especially in the Blacklands and south central Texas. A regional crop report issued by Texas A&M University noted corn producers as far north as central Texas have begun sowing. Meanwhile, a Mississippi State University extension economist believes corn acreage in Mississippi will double in 2007. John Anderson is looking for about 700,000 acres to be seeded to corn. And University of Arkansas corn breeder Fran Borland says there is a definite shift from cotton to corn and soybeans.
The things I've heard, it's going to be pretty dramatic, but probably perhaps a little less than what it is farther south, particularly in Louisiana, Mississippi, South Mississippi. I've heard some as much as 50% less cotton than was last year, and perhaps even more. What I've heard up here, it'll probably impact at least 10 to 20% effect of reducing cotton acreage.
University of Georgia ag economist Nathan Smith looks for corn acres in Georgia to increase by roughly 75,000 to 300,000 total. AgriConsult says soybean rust will likely trim yields in Brazil's number four soy-producing state. Large outbreaks of rust have been noted in southern and southwestern Goiás. Meanwhile, in Paraná, soybean yields have skyrocketed, with many producers averaging between 54 and 70, 60-kilogram bags per hectare, compared with just 40 bags a year ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
There are crop circles south of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. Todd Gleason has more on futuristic reasons why.
Scientists know the Earth's atmosphere changes. Every year it contains a little more carbon dioxide and a bit more ozone. Now, these changes impact plant life, and here in the Midwest that means something to farmers. They grow a lot of plants, primarily corn and soybeans. So there are crop circles south of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus, a place Stephen Long says that is filled with extra carbon dioxide and ozone.
What we're examining here is the effects of atmospheric change on our two major crops. Our carbon dioxide levels are rising every year and have been for the last 30 years. Ozone levels at the surface are also rising. Both of these affect crop growth, but we've been uncertain exactly how they affect them until now, because all experiments have essentially been in glass houses or some type of enclosure, where the enclosure itself produces many different effects. So this is the first time we've been able to look at the effect of both of these changes in the atmosphere on arable crops.
Long is a University of Illinois professor of crop sciences and plant biology. He says by the year 2050, which is what the atmospheric conditions in the open field experiment represent, the carbon dioxide levels could increase soybean yield by 15%. Good news. The bad news is that ozone has the opposite effect.
Ozone considerably lowers the yields. On average, the projected ozone levels for the year 2050 lower the yield of soybean by about 20%.
So a net loss. To be clear, these projections for 2050 do not all pile up at once. It's a gradual impact year to year and has been happening all along. Corn reacts differently, by the way, than soybeans to the two gases.
Corn does not respond directly to the carbon dioxide. However, under carbon dioxide, it does conserve more water. So what we find is in a dry year, we have a little more production. In a wet year, 2004, when we did the experiment, was a very good year for moisture. The corn showed no response to CO2. Corn is also far more resistant to ozone than soybean.
The University of Illinois project to study the effect of CO2 and ozone on corn and soybeans uses about a semi-load of liquid CO2 every other day, or 2 million pounds during the growing season. It's monitored 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to sunset. Stephen Long says results to date suggest it will be necessary to comb the corn and soybean germplasm libraries for genetic variations in the two crops that are well suited for future atmospheric conditions.
What we should bear in mind is, from theory and indeed in chambers, we can get a much bigger response to CO2. So it does act as a fertilizer, given that most agencies agree that whatever we do now, by the year 2050, we're going to be in a higher CO2 concentration than today. That should boost crop yields. What we're finding here, we are finding a boost, but it's not as big as it should be. So we've been running this experiment with soybean now for 5 years. We're now really moving into the second phase, trying to understand how can we get that full boost that we should get. So we're looking at different germplasm lines. We're trying to understand why the plant is not responding as fully as it should. The other aspect, of course, with the ozone is detrimental. So what we really want is a soybean which responds strongly to CO2 and is not affected by ozone. So the other side of this is we're looking at germplasm that can resist the ozone. We're trying to find out the mechanisms of damage and seeing how we can engineer the plant to try and avoid this damage.
The Midwest is not a place most tied to increased ozone levels. That's not really the case, and it's a big concern for Stephen Long.
I should perhaps also add that ozone may be very critical to us in this area, because while carbon dioxide is rising throughout the globe, ozone is only rising in specific areas. It's rising in the Midwest, it's rising in Western Europe, it's rising in China. But it is not rising in South America, so South American growers do not have to worry about ozone, and we do.
Ozone is a short-lived gas, says Long, but it can travel thousands of miles. The Midwest is the dumping ground for some of the nitrous oxide produced on the west coast of the United States. That nitrous oxide reacts with sunlight, and ozone's formed. Long and other researchers are working diligently to find genetic variations in corn and soybeans that are capable of using the, quote, fertilizer in carbon dioxide and resistant to the detrimental impact of ozone. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Governor Rob Blagojevich will ask Illinois lawmakers to increase school funding by 23% when he delivers his budget proposal tomorrow. Aides say the Democratic governor will seek a $1.5 billion increase that would bring state education funds to around $8 billion. The money would be to boost basic spending for each student, funding for special ed teachers, and the amount available for transportation and other special categories. Blagojevich is widely expected to call for a major new business tax to provide the additional money. The governor's proposal is big, but it may not please some education advocates. They want a major overhaul of the way the state funds education so schools don't rely so much on property taxes. You'll be able to hear tomorrow's budget address at noon here on AM 580. Illinois House members have approved freezing the state's electric rates for 3 more years. The vote was 92-5, but the bill faces a dim future in the state Senate, where President Emil Jones opposes a 3-year freeze. The state's two biggest power companies claim they'd face the prospect of bankruptcy with a freeze, but lawmakers are hearing from constituents who say they're being hit with massive power bills. The chairman of a federal agency that investigated the explosions that killed five workers at a central Illinois chemical plant 3 years ago says even simple walkie-talkies might have helped prevent the tragedy. U.S. Chemical Safety and Hazard Investigation Board Chairman Carolyn Merritt says Formosa Plastics failed to do a number of things in advance that might have helped prevent the accident. The board blamed the explosions on a worker who mistakenly opened a valve on a high-temperature reactor. The University of Illinois is cooperating with the state as two bidders compete to be the official soft drink company on state-owned property. An exclusive contract that the U of I negotiated with Coca-Cola expires this summer, and this time the university is included in a request for proposals the state sent out for a contract that's bigger in scope. Mike Bass of the U of I's Office of Business and Financial Services is on the committee reviewing the bids. He says a decision may be made by April or May, but the university has the ability to back out of the deal and negotiate on its own if it doesn't like the contract. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, let's begin down in South America, specifically Argentina, where it appears that they're getting some rain today. And I only bring that up because maybe they're not going to get any rain for a while after that.
Well, it's looking that way. Certainly through the next couple of days, the chances of rain, especially in northern and northeastern Argentina, central Argentina looks pretty good. But the trend is drier after that. And the trend is also drier as well for some of the central and southern and southeastern areas of Brazil. But those areas picking up a little bit of moisture. But the trend, as you mentioned, is going to be drier.
What about Brazil? They have some good conditions over the next couple of weeks or so?
It's certainly looking that way. The better rain chances are going to generally favor the northern areas. But after this precipitation, it's going to be drier, not necessarily real warm there. Actually, temperatures a little bit on the cool side, actually, in Brazil right now.
They've started the harvest, right?
That is correct. And it looks like in terms of favorable harvest weather, I don't think the rains we're seeing now will be much of a factor.
Turn your attention to South Africa. I haven't talked to an afternoon meteorologist in a while, but I don't think things have changed much.
That hasn't, and it doesn't look like it'll be changing much at all down there. There has been a little bit of moisture activity in some of the eastern areas. Those areas will still see some showers, but the basic pattern there has been pretty stagnant, not expecting any changes.
All right, turn our attention then back to home in the U.S. Midwest, corn and soybean belts. It looks like snow is on the way.
It is. Now, favoring the northern areas and probably not a lot of it. There is another little wedge of colder air that's pushing in right now, but we're going to see the cold air get consolidated into the upper Great Lakes in New England by later this week and this weekend. What that will allow is all of the corn belt, the soybean areas to warm up. In fact, across the northern plain states, the Midwest and the Corn Belt, moderating temperatures late this week and into early next week with the cold air hanging up over New England. So there's actually going to be a little hint of spring in the air in some areas of the Corn Belt and Midwest this weekend and next week.
Moderating temperatures like what, 40s to the 60s?
Yeah, we could be that warm. In fact, temperatures, especially in the western areas, will climb a little bit above normal. Now, in about 10 to 12 days, we'll probably swing back to some colder weather, but there's going to be a period of time, probably lasting a good week, where temperatures are going to warm up.
The trend thus far heading into spring has been a bias toward wetness. Are you seeing anything on the horizon to change that bias yet?
We are going to see this next week certainly drier, and that's going to maybe catch us up a little bit for the bias towards wet weather, but we are expecting, especially the last, let's say 12 to 14 days of March, we're expecting that the pattern is going to get real active again. So this little period of weather that we're going to see developing later this week through next week is probably going to be the quietest stretch of weather in March, something to maybe take advantage of because the end of March is likely going to get wet again.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis as well as the agricultural weather on our website, the whole show, too. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.